Well, it's the Bob McCowan podcast. Not shockingly, with Bob McCowan and John Shannon, or featuring John Shannon, I should say. One of our longest contributors to the radio program, television program, and now this podcast slash radio program. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, set to join us today. And my goodness, we have a lot to talk about, Mr. Shannon.
Well, tell you what, with I mean, the money just pouring out into the streets in Major League Baseball, the return of the New England Patriots, basketball, you know, I think basketball is as exciting as it has been in a long time in certain cities, like San Francisco and Phoenix. It's there is lots to talk about with Bob.
We will, rather than you and I babble off the top, let's get to Mr. Ryan as quickly as possible, take a quick break, and then Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe after this. McCowan and Shannon back with you, and Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe is our guest today. Mr. Ryan, we could go in about one of those days where you got enough news, you could go in about five different directions and say, okay, that's the lead. So we'll just pick one of those. We'll start with baseball. The Texas Rangers making the most noise during this offseason, signing Semien and now Seager. Seager gets 10 years, $325 million. The Rangers thus become the first team to spend $500 million in an offseason. Sort of a ridiculous kind of number, isn't it?
And the only surprise is it wasn't the Yankees that reached that milestone first.
Well, sure. Or the Red Sox, for that matter. You know,
although they're in a different phase.
I get it.
Now. Yeah. Different world up here now. Or down here, I should say.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this. John and I were chatting earlier. I'm guessing Seager winds up playing third. Semien probably goes to short. But, or do you expect something different?
I hadn't given it a deep thought about that. I mean, no, Semien was a career shortstop who would switch to second, can always go back. And, that would be the logical thing, I suppose. I'm still trying to digest those numbers for Seager. But yeah, anyway, that's the way it is. It's been, as you said, the big surprise has been how many of these big movements have been taking place before the end of this week when it is expected that there will be a lockout and everything's going to grind to a halt. The people are trying to get all this business done before they find out what the new ground rules financially are going to be. There was that's surprising some of the experts that expected that there would not be so much movement, but boy, there's been a lot of movement.
Well, what should that tell us, in your opinion, about the CBA negotiations, which have been very quiet in terms of leaking news?
I guess, I don't know. I just think it tells us that there are certain teams that want to win, and they want to scoop up what's out there. And you know, we know that one of the issues in baseball now is the charge by the Players Association that too many teams don't want to win, or at least not aren't trying hard enough to win quickly, at the very least. So I'm not sure. I can't honestly answer what this ramification is.
Well, let me throw something at you guys and see what you think. With this development of a lot of teams spending big money in anticipation before there's any conclusion to the CBA, is it possible that they have concern that it's hard to imagine there will be a hard cap, but that maybe the luxury tax will be lowered significantly?
Exactly. As you were speaking, I said, boom, boom. Absolutely. I would have to say that's the most logical conclusion that we can make, is that that's what they thought, that there will be a lower luxury tax. We're going to spend the money now. We can do it, and we're going to do it. And that's that. I can't think of any other possible reason, frankly.
Yeah. Bob, the thing that amazes me, and you kind of touched on it in your thoughts about the amount of money being spent, is, you know, the National Football League is the sport of record right now in the United States. The NBA is hotter than a pistol. Major League Baseball was supposed to be the dying sport. Where's all this money coming from? My goodness gracious.
Oh, they still have broadcast deals that are lucrative and both local and national, I guess. You know, the funny thing about this demise of baseball, the fact, all right, it is number two to football, right? There's no question. I mean, I hate admitting it, but because I'm a lifelong baseball devotee, but it's true. But, you know, when they look at some of the standards that they're being judged by today, as opposed to what was supposed to be the golden age, you know, back in the 50s, for example, look at the number, look at the attendance figures. I don't know if people have ever done this. Go check out the attendance figures in the 50s, you know, and drawing a million was okay, was damn good. Drawing two was unheard of. And now, you know, we teams, they're budgeting them. They got to draw two just to start. I mean, it just, the numbers are still, except for certain outliers such as Tampa Bay, or actually the whole state of Florida, frankly, both of those franchises. Other than that, you know, the numbers are, it's all relative. It's relative to the growth of the NFL. You know, no one, just remember that up to 1960, approximately, the three biggest sports in America were, without any question, baseball, boxing, and horse racing. Mm-hmm. And the NFL was in the next tier. We all know what's happened since then. But so the standards have changed. That's all.
Let's go back quickly to Seager and Semien in Texas. Are those the kinds of signings that make the Texas Rangers a viable contender? Or do you still need pitching and defense?
You always need pitching and defense. You always need pitching for sure. You cite for me the last team that truly and literally slugged its way to a World Series championship with mediocre pitching. And don't give me the big red machine, although, you know, that's the first thing. But they had a standout pitcher in Gullit, and they had a bullpen. They were they were ahead of their time, Sparky, and that was just a circumstance. They built that team around a bullpen, and because they had to, and that they were an outlier in that regard. You don't slug your way ever. You have to have the requisite amount of pitching. Now, the big change, as we all know, in very recent times, is that pitching is now back-ended rather than front-ended, front-loaded. You know, it's that the starting pitcher's role has been diminished and the bullpen's role has been increased. It's still, it's pitching, and you got to have it.
Speaking of that, the Toronto Blue Jays decided on Gausman rather than Ray. Essentially, both of them got the same amount. That's not very normal. Usually, you know, the guy you've got is the guy you like and the guy you know best. Even though Gausman was a guy that the Blue Jays tried to get a year ago and he wound up signing a 1-year deal. Give me your take on that. What does that tell you?
Anything? I don't understand. Look, first of all, Gausman's a good get. That's for sure. A very good get. And you're getting him at the right time and all that. But replacing him, you know, losing Ray at the same time, I don't know. I would have to be asking you guys that question. I haven't the slightest idea what the thinking process is.
Well, I can't answer it, because that's why I asked the question.
No, I don't. And I hadn't, you know, until you brought it up, because I hadn't really thought about the fact that, we got an exchange of top flight pitchers here, one right-handed and one left-handed. Is it possible? Is that I mean, you tell me, did Toronto think they can live without a left-hander as opposed to a, I don't know.
Ryu's the only, you know, quality left-handed pitcher, and I don't know if there's a question about him for the next couple of years, but they are very much a right-handed pitching starting lineup now, starting pitchers for sure.
Yeah. Well,
they lost two left-handers.
That's a puzzlement. Okay, we'll leave it. I'll give you the head scratch on that one.
And you know, I think we all have been victim or guilty of thinking that left-handed pitching, especially left-handed starting pitching, is a really valuable commodity and a more valuable commodity than right-handed starting pitching.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that is that true in this day and age?
Well, we know there's been plenty of new thinking in baseball and other ways. So maybe that's part of it. I don't know. I mean, meanwhile, you know, we quote unquote here lost we have two left handed. We still have Sale. I don't know what to make of Sale anymore, but they lost a guy who was a solid contributor in Eduardo and Rodriguez. They're desperate for find a starting pitcher. I don't care what hand he throws with.
Any thought of what you see the Mets doing? I mean, Max Scherzer is rumored to be $43 million a year.
Well, we know that Steve Cohen is alleged to be the richest of them all, of the richest owner of in the world of billionaires. He reigns. He's at the top of the list. And he's not afraid to spend money. There certainly they've also made other investments, you know, Marte, et cetera. And they know they're loading up, and you know they're afraid. They respect the Braves. The Braves have kind of risen to the top of the the crop in that division. And I think they, you know, he's fulfilling his promise to spend money. He's not afraid to do it. God knows. So there you go. But Max. God love him. I mean, you know, to come off with that kind of contract at 37.
Well, I used to be the biggest proponent of spending money on starting pitching. And don't worry about the bullpen. You'll find somebody. There's a million failed starters. Bullpen guys are failed starters. At some point in their careers, they all were starting pitchers who weren't good enough, so they went to the bullpen. Now, some adjusted better, and some had the attributes that made them better in the bullpen, others not. But that always was my philosophy. Here's the problem I have now, Mr. Ryan, is the amount of innings I'm going to get and the impact of a starting pitcher is significantly less than it was 5 years ago and for sure 10 years ago. Almost nobody goes nine innings. Almost nobody gets an opportunity for a shutout or a perfect game or, you know, no hitter or anything. And the emphasis is entirely on depth in the bullpen. But we have starting pitchers being paid $20+ million, $30+ million, and maybe now $40+ million. Is there an inconsistency in that? Am I the only one too stupid to recognize something's wrong here?
It's changed. I think there still is a value, a perceived value on starting pitching. What's changed is what the requirements for greatness are. Right. Once upon a time, it was nine innings. And you know, we all grew up, three of us, obviously, in that world where that was expected, and we rhapsodized about the good old days, about the and all that. Okay, the new standard is six, and they'll pay for people that can even give you six. I mean, what were the numbers? I saw them the other day, guys. I didn't write them down. How many pitchers went even five in the postseason? All told, the entire 2021 postseason, even went five, let alone six or seven. And you see the new laments about they do worry about overworking the bullpen. And I mean, I read enough of those quotes here the year when pitchers weren't going the requisite five, let alone or six, and they were crying. And Alex Cora was crying about, you know, I shouldn't say that, he doesn't cry, but he was commenting that there's a strain on the bullpen, you know, and this is because these guys got to work a little too more often because his starters aren't going six or barely going five. That's the new standard. That's all. There's less expected of them, these starting pitchers, but there's still certain people are better than others, obviously. And Scherzer has proven himself out over time. You know, he's a Hall of Famer, obviously.
I see that, Bob, but I don't understand the economics of it. I mean, who won the World Series this year? The Atlanta Braves. How many starting pitchers did they throw in the World Series?
Oh, I know.
They had one bullpen guy after another bullpen guy.
They started two relievers in
they even
two
lost
of the, two of the four victories. Yeah.
And that's a good point, Bob, because obviously, not obviously, as we know, baseball has been, and as many sports are, a copycat industry. This is interesting. Yeah, very, very interesting. The real people, you know, but you know, we're in a world 13 man pitching staffs, you know. I mean, if somebody told me that 25 years ago, you'd have a 13 man, you'd be carrying 12 or 13 pitchers. Mm-hmm. I always like to go back and cite, look at the Finley A's in the 70s, the three teams that won. And there was one year that basically they had had a nine man pitching staff. And essentially, we were an eight, and it was balanced with two right-hand starters, two left-hand starters, two right-hand relievers, two left-hand relievers. That was their pitching staff.
Yeah.
And that's like talking about King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table.
Oh yeah, you can't do that. Nobody's doing that now.
Well, and really, what that does is it puts pressure on your backup infielders and your lack of depth in places where you may need a bat at a certain point, right?
Oh yeah, and people have like three men. But these modern managers, you know, this is the way the world they live in. This is the way they play. They're all in the same boat, you know, in that regard. for the most part. So yeah, absolutely, no question.
Well, I'm going to and Shannon will tell you, I argue this endlessly. The my belief that what they're doing in baseball today is a bunch of hooey, and I really don't care about the analytics of it. But I think there's a case to be made here. If nothing, even if you think this is the right thing to do, that a starting pitcher should never face the same lineup three times in a day, you know, if you're going to buy into that, then how do you buy into $43 million for Scherzer? Well, it just doesn't make any sense to me. You remember Papelbon probably as well as anybody. He wasn't the first reliever to get $10 million?
Very possibly, yeah.
But he went to Washington, right?
Think about the three man, the third time around thing. It doesn't apply to the elite guys, I don't think. It doesn't apply to Scherzer, does it? I thought we were talking about the average Joe, the average major league starting pitcher, that Mr. X and Y and Z, that it's them that we're talking about necessarily. Are we really talking about the Max Scherzers and I don't know, a few other names out there of the world? I don't know. Sure.
Remember what happened to Blake Snell in the World Series. When he was pitching, he was a pretty good pitcher at the time.
I'm with Bob in terms and general philosophy. I'm so distraught about the way that they're playing the game and the three outcome thing and the pitching manipulations. I don't know that if we have to go so far as to regulate against the shifts as opposed to say, hey, learn how to bat better. You know, I don't know, but it's not the same game. I still think it's a great game. I'm holding out on, but it has changed.
But don't you think this brings me back to the Gausman Ray discussion? Don't you think that at some point that between analytics and analysis, you know, the Blue Jays said we can pay Ray this much, but we may go a little more for Gausman, and that's why we chose Gausman over Ray?
Okay,
because I don't understand. I mean, if to Bob to McCallum's point about, you know, it's the hand you know versus the one you don't. I mean, to me, that's a big surprise. I just wonder how much analytics falls into every decision being made.
I know. If that's the case, just another, log on the fire there. I don't know. It's a good point. We've said I don't know with among the three of us about 15 times already because we're trying. I'm waiting. Is there any hope of an explanation from the powers that be and with the Blue Jays?
Well, we're going to try and get, obviously we try all the time to get them on this program, and occasionally they do concede. At some point, they're going to have to answer the question. Yeah. And the question is, why one over the other?
Yeah.
For essentially the same money, you took a guy that you know less than the guy you had. You took a guy who didn't win a Cy Young and gave up, let go a guy who did win a Cy Young. And they're both about the same age. Age really doesn't make that much of a difference. Yeah. I think there's like a year difference or something like that. It's really not relevant. And as for Scherzer, I'll remind you, Mr. Ryan, next year as I'm watching games, the first time that he gets yanked in the sixth inning or seventh inning,
you'll be
because he gave up a single.
You'll be messaging me, I'm sure.
You know I will. Because this is a horse that I ride right to the finish line. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with more talk about football and the Patriots.
Yeah.
And Tiger Woods kind of came out of the
cocoon. We got to talk about basketball too, Bob.
Well, a little hoops.
We got Warriors Suns tonight. I mean, goodness gracious.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. We'll do it after this message. It's McCown, it's Shannon, and Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe is with us. Well, Shanny, where do you want to start?
I want to start with the basketball because I think Phoenix, I think, has won 16 in a row. The Warriors have the best record in basketball, and they're finally going to meet tonight. And to me, it's just, I don't think anybody expected Phoenix to be this good for a second year in a row. You expected you picked Golden State, McCown.
No,
you
I didn't. Golden State. Oh, no, okay. I did not. I'm
going to the tape. I'm going to the tape.
I'm staying out of this.
The notation I made here, Mr. Ryan, for your edification, when Phoenix 2 years ago, when they had that play-in thing, that eight games,
yeah,
Phoenix got in only because they were mathematically qualified to get in. That's the only reason.
Right.
They won all eight games,
yeah,
and did not get into the playoffs.
Right.
And I thought, that can't be a mirage. They worked hard in those eight games. They tried to win all eight games, and they succeeded. Maybe mm-hmm. they were just the racehorse that started the rush, you know, a furlong too late. Mm-hmm. And then we saw what they did last year mm-hmm. and almost won themselves a championship. I am not surprised by the Phoenix Suns. And I don't know whether they're better than Golden State, but they're real good. They're legitimate.
What do you think, Bob? Are they better than Golden State?
Well, we're going to find. I don't know. I'm going to find out. I'm just there. Let me tell you about when I took a look at them, what's going on with them. And I said, oh, my God. They have nine guys averaging at least 8 points a game. That is very rare.
That's very rare.
They have a star, obviously, in Booker, and he can go get you 35. And then after that, you know, they got Ayton, he'll give you a 17, and Bridges, who's really become a revelation, Mikal Bridges. But then they keep going on, and the Kaminskys and the Crowders and the Paynes and Johnson. Nine guys. And I said, you know what that jumped into my head, guys? This somewhere up there in the coach's, you know, sports bar in the sky, John McLeod is beaming. This is a John McLeod team.
Yeah.
He was the most amazing manipulator, guys, of minutes I've seen in all my time in the NBA, covering the NBA. And uncanny clock in his head. Yeah, he wasn't playing anybody more than 30. He manipulated as a rule, you know. He manipulated that one, and his teams were to a fault. I always thought, you know, he was one of the first guys to start yanking guys with two fouls in the second quarter, like that was a death sentence. Right. You got two fouls, you can't, you know, in the NBA, it's ridiculous. You got six to play with, right?
Yeah.
I mean, sure. That's always, well, he was the first guy I saw to routinely yank guys with two fouls. He was worried about those minutes. Okay, this is John McLeod's vision of basketball come to life here. Nine guys averaging 8 points a game. Their balance is, you know, is there. And they do have a go-to guy, you know, they in Booker. The other thing I wondered about, Bob and John, before the season was, I mean, I don't know the young man. I'm just saying, you never know. Would Ayton pout because he didn't get the money he wanted? You know, would he pout? No, he's playing great. No. I didn't know. Some guys, you know.
Sure.
I don't know. But now, so whether they're better, I'm more surprised about the Warriors. Obviously, I never thought they'd be this good right now without Thompson and without Weissman. And
me neither.
You know, and who did you, Jordan Poole?
Did he come?
I mean, yeah. Come on. You know, just another guy, I thought. And he's been tremendous for them. And then ultimately, Steph has never played better. He's never been better at 33. And that's, you know, what a tribute that is.
And by the way, Andrew Wiggins has played pretty well.
And Wiggins is living up to what, much more to what he was. Yeah. Minnesota saying, huh, wait a minute. Where was this? You know?
How much of this is coaching? Both guys, in Phoenix and in the Bay Area, boy oh boy, they seem to really have a touch with their players.
Well, Kerr is proving himself completely, and Monty has a lot of respect in the league, you know, and has had it. I'm looking forward to this. I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't even realize it or think about it until this morning, and I found out about it. Oh boy! Well, I know what I'm doing at 10 o'clock Eastern tonight, and I'm really excited about it. As a basketball fan, I'm really curious, and they have another one coming up on Friday, by the way. You know, but this is good. This is good. I'm really excited about it.
Are we all still looking at Brooklyn in the East?
Yeah, if you were started tonight, you'd have to say they're the favorites in the East. They're still the defending champion, Milwaukee. No, I shouldn't say that. They haven't hit their stride. You know, they've had injuries. I'll give an example. When they came into Boston, it was 2 weeks ago Friday. Four of their first six rotation guys were not there, and the Celtics needed overtime to beat the Milwaukee bench. All right, so I'm just saying they still don't have Lopez. They still don't have DiVincenzo. They finally got Middleton back, you know, so, but they're not whole. And then and until they get into Lopez was important to their defense. I mean, he and DiVincenzo is a cog. So they're not who they should be or will be later. But if we were starting tonight, you know, okay, Brooklyn. But the East is very uncertain after that, you know, for sure.
It's quite amazing. Actually, it's quite amazing. There's no outcry about where's Kyrie. What's wrong with I don't read or hear anything about Kyrie anymore. Do you, Bob?
No, it's quiet. And you know, people, I just think, I don't know. I know how I feel about him. And I know how certain people feel about him. I don't know whether a general population has just decided he's just too weird to even worry about. And, you know, my mother used to have an expression when we were driving from here in Massachusetts down to New Jersey you know, see her, and she'd say, "I'll expect you when I see you." And I think that's the way the Nets fans have finally reconciled themselves to this guy. Okay, if we get him, fine, you know, but we can't count on it.
Ben Simmons the same way in Philly?
That's been quiet now lately. That's kind of suddenly, it's just is what it is now kind of thing. Yes, absolutely. It is. And meanwhile, Daryl Morey blew his chance to get, you know, as much as I can't wait to see how few cents on the dollar he'll finally get when he finally decides to trade him.
That's two pretty interesting players that are sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, but very different people. But they're both sitting out and willfully, in a sense, you know, and very interesting stories.
If you had a really crummy team and nothing but money, you go get those two guys. I don't think they could possibly live together. But well, you could change your fortunes overnight.
Well, they would actually complement. You know, I mean, with Simmons, maybe truly is a 6'9" point guard. You know, and Kyrie certainly is one of the great individual scoring guys we've seen at his size. But you have other, you get additional issues that come along with Kyrie's presence in your midst.
Well, both of them, I think, but
yeah. And I'm a little more.
Well, we wouldn't have an argument who shoots first.
I'm a little more. No, you sure. Wouldn't have an argument. You know, Ben wouldn't have any trouble seeding his shots to Kyrie.
No.
I tried to mention Miami earlier really quickly. Yeah. They went out and got Kyle Lowry, and they thought that was the piece that they needed to contend. And we haven't seen that really materialize.
We haven't seen it yet to that degree. I was a big on Miami before the season as well, and I thought that was a really good acquisition. And I still give them, I don't know, I haven't really micromanaged or studied them to know what's happening there. But I still wouldn't. I know they're capable. You know, the other team in the East that, you know, I'm curious about always is Chicago. I like things they did, and they have certain nights when they're really, really good. And they, you know, they could be a postseason threat.
Anything else on the basketball front, Mr. Shannon, from you?
No, I'm very happy now.
All right. Well, let's say football till the end. Tiger Woods has come out of the cocoon, if you will. Mm. And I don't say that disrespectfully in any way, shape, or form. It's been about 9 months.
Yeah, it's January. When it was February or January, I don't know.
Yeah, since the accident.
Yeah.
He said that obviously his rehab has taken a lot longer than he thought it would. It's been more difficult than he thought it would. He is hitting balls. He does get tired. And he said he doesn't believe he can be the number one player in the world anymore. And if anything, will play somewhat of a reduced schedule if and when he's ready to go back. Some general thoughts on Tiger.
I loved the allusion he made to Ben Hogan. Mm-hmm. And I'll be as Ben, you know, the way Ben Hogan approached it. Now, yes, for people who don't know, Ben Hogan had a catastrophic accident in 1949. He was run over by a tractor trailer, you know, or something, and he had multiple injuries, and he came back to win all his seven majors afterward, but a number of his majors.
I'm not afterward. Sure. Yeah.
And he played a very limited schedule, and he picked his spots. Now Tiger was kind of doing that in his prime anyway, right?
Yeah, he was
more than any other great player. He was limiting his, but anyway, so he, the allusions to Hogan and I think Tiger's a practical, I was impressed with what he said. The way he said he's going to go about it, that he's at peace with his reality of his new life, you know, if we can, he said all the, you know, it's very impressive things. And if he's going to live up to that, it's going to be interesting to see what, if he can accomplish anything. Because, I mean, you know, what can he accomplish? I have no idea. But it'll be, obviously, his return will be, you know, a huge story everywhere he goes. I can't imagine how good he can be. But then again, I'm sure if you read about the, then, you know, you guys, I'm sure you know the story, but if people were to go check out what they said, what the extent of Hogan's injuries were at a time when the medical science wasn't anywhere near as accomplished as it is today, it'll make you appreciate what that man did. I mean, if nothing else, if he can revive interest in that for people, that would be a good benefit.
Well, with Hogan, it was A, will he live? B, will he ever walk again? And the notion that he'd ever play golf was dismissed almost immediately. There was just almost no chance.
It was interesting to see or hear Tiger talk about how his leg will never be the same.
Well,
and that
your
that
body,
and,
right? And
yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. It's important, and of course, you know, you got to walk those 18 too, you know, and that's sad. So it'll be, but everything he's always going to be news. You know, he's always
going for
to, sure. And that's that. And you know, now we're the, you know, I'm going to say the clock is ticking, but we're curious to see, you know, when and if 2022 at the end, I doubt, I don't know, maybe it'll be 2023, you know. Yeah. And let me ask you this, do you guys think he would be condescend to enter the, whatever they're calling, whatever the new name of the senior circuit will be, it's always changing due to
Champions Tour, the Champions Tour.
Yes, I mean, okay, it'll probably have a new name by the time he's ready to join it. But, you know, I mean, Phil was willing to, you know, Phil has gently stuck his toe in the water enough and made some money out of it. I don't know if Tiger would ever, you know, condescend. I mean, hell, Jack did it.
Oh yeah, Jack did it. Arnold did it.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see.
And Phil won four of his first six tournaments, yeah, I think, on the tour.
Phil took it by storm.
But I'll tell you, here's a question that I have. If Tiger does go to play the senior tour, Phil's presence probably has had some impact on attendance and interest in the senior tour. Some. Mm-hmm. Tiger is a completely different animal, you should pardon the expression,
yeah,
in terms of drawing attention and interest and a fan base. The senior tour is kind of a casual walk in the park. Some people go, some people don't. There's no great rush for tickets. You probably can get a ticket to any day you want at any tournament all year long. So what if
54 holes? 54 holes? Yeah. It's a shorter tournament.
What could Tiger do for that?
Oh, well, that's a great question. I'm sure they would do anything. Any amenity or any.
What do you want, Tiger?
Would be fulfilled. That's all I put it that way.
Bob, do you think Tiger's a sympathetic person now?
That's a great question. I think it's probably, if it were on a 100% basis, I'm guessing a minimum still a positive feelings that people have about him, more at least 60 to 70. I think I'm guessing. I don't know. I mean, you know, people evaluating everything, his poor persona, the personal life story, which mm-hmm. offends some people, obviously, the kind of arrogance that people perceive and would offend other people, you know. So, but I still think that more people are interested and would root for Tiger than won't.
What is really interesting to me, I got the opportunity to spend a fair bit of time with Jack Nicklaus over the course of his career. And in the early days, you guys will remember this, Arnold Palmer was the king. Mm-hmm. He was the champion. He was the guy who was beloved. And Jack was considered the fat guy from Columbus who would never be good enough. They hated Jack. It took Jack quite a while to get the respect and the admiration of the fan base. And in the course of doing that, Jack's personality changed. He became much more likable. Mm-hmm. And it's taken longer for Tiger. And maybe it's sympathy rather than likability. I respected Tiger, but I never liked him. I thought he was a phony baloney. I'm starting to, you know, have some level of sympathy for him. What about you?
Well, he's lived. When he was in his prime. And number one, I did root for him, and I rooted for him on the basis of the history. And I truly assumed that I would be among those sports journalists present when he broke Jack's record. I assumed I'd be wherever it was. I'd be working, and he, yep. You know, when he had 14, he had so much more time to go. It's just a question: is he going to win 21, or is he going to win 25? How is he going to win? Mm-hmm. I rooted for him on that basis. I attended many a press conference. I never had a one-on-one with him, so I never met him personally. I never had a one-on-one.
Tiger.
Yeah. I did with some others, but not him. But his press conferences, I thought, were informative. I thought he just got undeserved criticism for a certain alleged blandness of his answers and all that. I thought he's intelligent. I thought I learned some golf stuff, very interesting things from listening to him opine. Anyway, I had a positive feeling about him, you know, frankly, myself. So that's all I can tell you. But you know, then, you know, the circumstances of the sorted circumstances of, you know, the accident in 09 and the driveway thing and the golf club and the wife, the angry wife, and, you know, and all that. And then the revelation about the mistresses and all that, you know, certainly put a new light on everything for a lot of people. No question.
Well, I think one thing is true. We all hope Tiger gets healthy again and healthy enough to go play. And it, as it has in the past when he's been out for a year. I have to say this,
he is a singular presence in the history of the game. That,
no question.
That we will never, I doubt very much that we will ever see anyone dominate the way he did for a prolonged period of time, to the point where he made every cut. Everybody else during those years would occasionally miss a cut. I don't care mm-hmm. who it was, whatever perceived rival, whether it was Phil or VJ, who was a rival for a while, or David Duval, who was a rival for a while, or Mickelson himself, or any, they all missed cuts. It was like a giant stop the presses web moot story when he finally missed a cut. You know, it was and then the percentage of wins of majors at that point for that condensed period of time. Well, I don't think we'll ever see anyone do anything.
Never.
Like that. You know,
never.
But you know, so that's not, it was. I was fortunate enough to be present at a couple of the milestone ones. I wasn't there at the Masters when he won that first Masters by 12 strokes, but I was at Pebble Beach in 2000. Wow. And I still remember looking up at that scoreboard continually, and one guy had red numbers. And he won that tournament by 15 strokes. One guy under par. And it was him, and you know, that I'll never forget that. Who can forget that?
I don't think there's been a player or an athlete in any sport to have an impact on the sport outside of the hardcore fan than Tiger Woods. When you think about it, we can talk about Roger Federer, we can talk about Michael Jordan, we can talk about Wayne, we can talk, but I think Tiger has had more influence on his sport outside of the hardcore golf fan than any other athlete.
I think, you know, someone might want to put up Michael Jordan as a, you know, counter answer argument. Interesting that they are, you know, friendly. Tiger, the young Tiger, looked up to Michael, and they became, you know, at least strong acquaintances, if not close friends. No, I think his impact is way outsized, and one of the said that, you know, you can argue the three most important figures in golf that popularized the game for the masses were President Eisenhower and two Arnold. You know, you have to give Arnold his due there, or what Arnold did to democratize golf, you know, away from the country club thing, the image of people with that everyman thing he had, his style of play, smoking that cigarette, walking those 18 holes. Everything he did was like some guy that you'd be playing with at your local club, you know.
Right place at the right time. And Arnie came along with television. And that was so key, so important.
You know, his reign was so brief. His last it went from 1958 to 64, and his last Masters was in 64, his last major, you know, and it's amazing. But it was a great comet that flashed across the sky, really. But then the impact after that was still enormous.
I've often wondered, did television take on golf because of Arnold, or did Arnold become Arnold because of television?
Well, the answer is yes to both. Well,
to both, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both were simultaneous.
Right place at the right time. Right place at the right time. That's the magic of it.
Yeah. Well, all right. Let's get to football here for the last 10 minutes or whatever we've got left here. I can't start anywhere else but your New England Patriots.
Our guys?
Like, you know, I don't hate the Patriots. I'm not jealous of Bostonians and people from Massachusetts and the Northeast who have loved the Patriots in spite of the fact that they know the rest of the country hates them. I'm not one of those guys that hates you.
Okay.
But this is something here, what's going on right now this year.
As if September never happened. It's like, because there were two, it's as if, what month? We started playing, you know, 6 weeks ago. Technically speaking, the defense has been much more than anyone anticipated. The defense they put up some tremendous numbers until last week when they managed, the one despite giving up 279 yards on the ground. We'll see if anybody else is going to be able to exploit them in that manner the way the Titans did. But you got to start with the idea that they hit the right button on the 15th pick in the 2021 draft.
No kidding.
And the fact that he was sitting there for them because the other four had all been taken. And we knew there were those five guys and the five quarterbacks were going to go, and he went fifth and final. I'm not going to say that I'm guaranteeing that he's going to play out to be the best in the long run. I still think Trevor Lawrence is going to prove himself. You know, he's in a bad situation. This kid lucked out in that, you know, he was put in the lap of Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. And that is really a very good beneficial thing. Okay, the kid turns out the name that popped into my head the other day was he's the great grandson of Bart Starr. You know, he's in that the lineage. He's in that tree of great. I don't want to damn him by calling him a game manager, but you know, he's not a cannon arm guy. He's not a gunslinger. You know, he's in that mold, the Montana mold. And guess who? Was that guy that played big on all those years?
Yeah, you remember that guy.
Well, you know, he's a little, you know, chip off the old block to a degree kind of guy. That's the nature of his game. And he has settled in beautifully.
And well, it's funny that that of the five quarterbacks in that draft, he probably fit what Bill Belichick wanted more than any other.
Yeah. I think it's pretty safe. And once again, we don't have any definitive answer on any of them. You know, Zach Wilson showed a little promise on Sunday, by the way, finally, you know, with the Jets. You know, the Fields and Lance are in different circumstances, and Trevor, we know the circumstance he's in. Right. He fit. Oh, absolutely. Do we give credit the Patriots with or do we say how lucky they were that the others all passed them up and all the judgments were made? Whichever, they got them and they have them, and that's number one. But we wondered about how much weaponry he was going to have. You know, there was a lot of lamenting around here before the season about their wide receiver core was, you know, not up to what A, B, C, and E, D, E, and particularly one in Tampa Bay. And Kendrick Bourne has emerged. Jacoby Myers has somewhat emerged. And now they invested all this money in two tight ends. And the first 3 weeks, they got nothing out of either of them. Now Hunter Henry is stepping up. And Jonnu Smith finally he did more in the first period of Sunday than he's done all year. Maybe they're going to get some benefit out of that. One other good draft pick, Christian Barmore, defensive tackle, has turned out to be a real force. And, you know, and J.C. Jackson just seems to intercept the pass every week. But remember, they do have this wonderful coaching staff. And, you know, they were closer to winning. You know, they lost some tough games early in the year. They really did. And they lost some tough games. So they were never all that far away. But it's all falling into place right now. There's no question. Now we know that the test is out there. They got two Buffalo games left, including next Monday night. And they got Indy. Their fate's in their hands, but you can say that about all those. Same with Buffalo. This is going to be good, you know. Buffalo and
oh yeah,
this is going to be a lot of fun.
we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to raise this question right now. There are plenty of people who think Bill Belichick is the best coach in the National Football League and maybe the best coach ever in the National Football League. And I'm not here to say he isn't. But Belichick's future was always tied to Brady. Was Belichick the great coach because he had Tom Brady? Well, he doesn't have Tom Brady now. He has somebody else, a young kid that he drafted. If New England in the next year, two, three, wins a championship with this kid, doesn't that establish once and for all the stamp on Belichick as, well, he's got to be the best?
Well, at least this way, it certainly settles the argument about the Brady thing in that it's the 50-50. It's fine. They're both the GOATs.
Both great. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the quarterback GOAT, the coach GOAT. Yeah, that would settle it. Right now, you know, the edge goes to Brady, what he did last year, blah, blah, blah. But right now, you know, and you don't think Bill isn't enjoying this. By the way, did you know, I don't know, do you happen to see the very end of the game against the Titans, the brush off he gave Vrabel?
Yeah.
Wow. You know, Vrabel was a prized pupil. One of his yeah. greatest things he ever did was pluck this somewhat obscure backup player from Pittsburgh and bring him into New England and turn him loose and, you know, three Super Bowls later, you know. Anyway, the answer to the question is yes. If he can win now, that's to just say, look, there's no right answer. They're both who they are. One, they complemented each other, and I think that was it. But right now, you know, Brady's backers are crowing, you know, and that's fine. But Bill isn't done yet, folks.
Not so fast,
as Lee Corso would say.
And all I know is that Buffalo Bills fans thought for sure
they were finished with the New England Patriots.
And Sean McDermott, we had no problem ever again with the New England Patriots. Not so fast.
No, isn't it good? It's and the idea that we got, here comes December and we got two of these games. Come on, that's great stuff for us.
Oh, you bet it is.
Fans. That's wonderful.
Mr. Ryan, a million more things we could talk about, but time is our enemy. We thank you so much for taking time for us, as always. You look great. And we'll hopefully have a chance to talk again soon.
I'm always here for you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, back after this. So our thanks to Bob Ryan for joining us. Anything he said you disagreed with?
No, I didn't. I was interested to hear him say he was surprised with the Warriors. I just think any team that has Steph Curry and Steve Kerr on it has a chance.
Yeah, except 2 years ago, they were like the worst team in the NBA.
Yeah, but I mean, Curry, yeah, no, you're right. But I just think that, and Klay Thompson's eventually going to get back, although there's lots of stories out that he's really having a tough time with the rehab. And realizing how much work it's going to be because it's been so long, but they're still going to be a factor before the NBA championship gets given out. So I they're kind of a fun thing for me, and I love hearing his basketball takes. So
before we bid everybody a fond adieu, we talked a fair bit over the last little while about Evander Kane and what happens when he gets finished with his 21 game suspension. Mm-hmm. And what do the Sharks do with him? Do they welcome him back? Do they, well, he's now cleared waivers. Right. What's next in your opinion?
There's an interesting storyline in San Jose. First of all, the Kane storyline. Doug Wilson has also taken a leave of absence there. I mean, the general manager. So, and we certainly hope that everything's okay with Doug. So you wonder what impact that has. Plays in all of this, but Evander Kane will end up getting back in game shape because there's lots of stories that he hasn't practiced very much or skated very much, so he'll go to the American League. They play right in the same arena in San Jose, the Barracudas do, so I suspect that he'll play there for the next, what, 5 or 6 games, and then whether the Sharks try to convince people that he's a valuable commodity to them. is another story. I don't, no one has given an indication, Bob, no one has given an indication that that he will be welcomed back to the big club at this point. There's still nothing concrete that says when Kane is fit, he will play for the Sharks. That has never been said.
Well, just clarify for the audience the relevance of him being placed on waivers and then clearing waivers.
Well, if placed on waivers, you tell the other 31 teams that you have 24 hours.
No, I get that. I think people know that.
No, but you place them on waivers so you could send them to the American League, and you place them on waivers. There was nobody that was going to take him because nobody will take that full contract. I mean, he's owed, you know, his contract, I think it's still owed more than $40 million. So nobody's going to take that contract. So this was a way to get him into a place where he can actually play the game a little bit and see what he has left, if anything, or has the desire to play in the American League. It's all measured at this point, and Kane doesn't have very much choice in the matter, really.
Any opinion as to what they would want to do in this situation?
I suspect they will want to move him. The team has played very well for these first 21 games. I think they've been one of the good stories in hockey for the first 21 games. And as we talked about with Brian Lawton, they'll probably try to move him, probably agree to take some of his salary back, and trade him for 50 cents on the dollar if they can. But I'm not sure there's much of an appetite for Evander Kane in the National Hockey League right now.
Well, I think they'd be thrilled to get 50 cents on the dollar. I think they'll probably wind up trading him for 5 cents on the dollar.
Well, we'll see.
Well,
as soon as you take money back, you're buying the opportunity to get something in return, right?
Maybe, but you still got to have a willing participant on the other side of the table. And if I'm going to take on that contract, and
no guarantee, Bob, there's no guarantee there's anybody on the other side of the table.
I think you're right. I think it's almost a guarantee there isn't anybody on the other side of the table, at least not right now. We got to get out of here. Thank you, John. And our thanks to Bob Ryan as well. And thank you for watching or listening, as the case may be. For John Shannon, Bob McCown, we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.